The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here. 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Look at you. You are a chiseled bronze
yes.
god.
Yes. Do I look good or what?
Wow. I barely recognize you. How'd you lose all that weight so quickly?
I wish I lost weight.
Wow.
I wish. I first thing my wife said to me when she picked me up outside, oh my goodness. You've gained so much weight. You look so fat.
Was that basically her hello? It's good to see you. Welcome home.
That's the first thing out of her mouth. You look so fat.
Meanwhile, she's lost, what, 30
yeah.
pounds?
You're going on a diet.
She's totally ripped, so that's the last thing you needed.
I'll take the other side. It feels like a family back together at Thanksgiving
yes.
for the first time.
Where's the turkey?
I'll go the other side. I'm happy to see you, buddy.
Well, thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
I am, too. This is your comfort zone, this little room we're in right here.
I'm not a good flyer. I don't like waiting.
We were talking about how bad you would be in the airport yesterday.
Well, I do things that normal people don't do.
No.
Like complain a lot to the people at the desk and try to sneak into first class.
First thing is I'm checking into Los Angeles and I give the bag, that big hockey duffel bag I have, which also has like a steel suitcase that looks like it could have a bomb. I mean, let's be honest. And before that gets on, I could tell, I know it's right there at about 50 pounds. So I give the guy a 20 and I said, why don't you just give me back a 10? I figured 10 bucks is enough for a suitcase. He puts it on the thing, 53 pounds. He goes, I got to charge you $125. I said, why don't you keep the 20? He goes, okay, we'll call it even. this is L.A., baby. And he looked at me like, I can give you the 10 and charge you $125, or you can give me a bigger tip. I said, I'll give you the big, why?
I would have taken something out.
Right.
That's what I would have done.
No, but, 4 pounds worth of clothes? What is 4 pounds worth of clothes? What, like a couple of shoes or something like that? I don't know. What am I going to do with the shoes?
I don't know. Everything I own adds up to about 4 pounds of
I would
clothes.
Have taken it. I would have put something in my backpack.
Well, I had a briefcase thingy, but I don't think I could have fit anything
could
in there.
Could have fit a shirt in there, a couple shirts.
That's not 4 pounds, though. Jeez.
How much stuff? Well, you were gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah, 53 pounds. So I got away with that. But here's the part. I got into it with this guy getting off at Detroit. And I kind of started it, but I was aggravated.
No.
I had 35 minutes to get to my connection and to get off my flight.
Detroit is a huge airport, by the way.
And you have to go through that long corridor with the funky lights.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had 35 minutes by the time I deployed. I made it with 7 minutes left.
Yeah, it's a long way across.
And I wasn't running. I had to jog a little bit, but I was carrying and schlepping stuff. But
I wish I'd seen that.
You know how you deplane and you let the row in front of you get off and... I mean, stand up in front of you?
Yeah, you just went up to the front.
You were that guy.
I jumped in front of the guy who was a row ahead of me, and he goes, in a hurry, are we? I said, no, I didn't know you were going to get up. And people are listening, and he goes, oh, did you think I was just going to sit here all day, right? And I came back, and I said, no, I thought you were going to wait till the end to get help getting off the plane since you needed help getting on the plane.
Whoa.
And he goes, why would I need it? He goes, nobody helped me get on the plane. I go, funny, because when they said anybody needs any special assistance or wants to get on early, come now. And I saw you walk on. And he turned bright red. I go, not much to say now.
Here we go.
So if you need help getting on, why don't you wait till everybody gets off so you can have special time getting off?
Did you tell him that I have a quarter of a billion listeners? Did anybody recognize you?
No, nobody recognized me. Thank goodness for that.
For the Spanier and Plank show on Sunday nights on Fox Sports Radio.
Thank goodness for that, too, because I was in a mood, too. What? I'm like, I got to catch my connection.
What would you have done? Look, this is what I would have done. I would have recognized Arnie. I would have videotaped this. And then I would have extorted money out of
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's 100%.
I could have been like Britt McHenry, who said, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Do you know who I am?
I'll tell you, nothing on a plane drives, and a lot of things drive me crazy in the airport, mostly the part about never, ever getting on a plane in time.
Oh.
But that's beside the point, and the night sleeping in the airport one after another. But when people jump, as soon as the plane stops and the light goes off and you can undo your seatbelt and so on, everybody leaps out of their seat, gets in the row, grabs for their bags. And it never occurs. It's like speeding up to a red light.
Yes, exactly.
It's the same thing. It's those people who go 50 miles an hour and then slam on the brakes to get to a red light.
I have a new rule. If you need help getting on the plane, You have to wait till the end to get help getting off. Watch how many people don't need help getting on the plane anymore. I promise you that.
I do. I look at these people and go, where are you going? There's no point in standing up. You're in row 33 in a 33-row plane.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. But I will say, in Arnie's defense, he did only have 35 minutes to get to his connecting flight. And you don't know where he was. Because when I was going to Minneapolis for the Super Bowl, I got off in Terminal A and ended up, my next flight was like Terminal F.
Oh,
and
we're it's hell.
It was like 40 minutes worth of walking.
Where was that, in Dallas?
No, this was in
Detroit.
Detroit.
No, this was in Detroit.
Minneapolis.
This was in Philly going to Minneapolis.
Okay, because Dallas might be the hardest airport to negotiate around. You've got lose about 3 pounds in sweat going from place to place from Dallas.
And I asked the guy, the gate agent, I said, can you call over to my gate, tell him I'm running by? And the guy doesn't answer me. He's just doing what he's doing with the code. I said, so you're not going to answer me? He goes, do you see that I'm doing something? I said, thank God you can't talk and do something else at the same time. Thank you.
I have no idea how any human beings work in airports. And I'm talking about customer relations.
Yeah. I'm not a good customer guy.
People are either not, they're either, they don't care and they're unemotional because everything went perfectly, or they're livid.
And
you're standing in their way and it's your fault. Make it better.
Would you have been mad if I didn't make today's show? Because they were offering $600 in vouchers if you wanted to get...
People make a living doing that.
I would have gotten off last. I think I would have gotten the first flight this morning. I don't know what time it would have been, but $600 in vouchers.
People sit in the airport and do that.
I would do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. $600.
The first flights usually get into Burlington. Well, if you went from Detroit to New York to Burlington, you could probably leave at about 5 in the morning.
Wow, I should have taken the $600 in the vouchers. I like that. We got to give a shout-out real quick, Rich. Our intern, Alex.
Alec. You always say
his name wrong.
Yeah.
Who is the principal at the BFA? Chris Masaga? Maschia. Do you know him?
I do. I've probably met him, but no.
Big fan of mine. Just wanted to give a shout out to him. Principal at BFA. Doesn't like you guys, but
so
big fan of mine.
So that's the guy.
No. He listens to the show every day. So just want to give him a big shout out.
Sure, he appreciates you butchering his name.
Well, come on. It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, right.
It's the thought that counts.
You're like the guy on CNN with me.
Oh, man. By the way, I looked at your Facebook page. I love that the boss is all around here going, way to go, Brady. That's great. I've been doing it for 20 years, not one thing from anybody.
Well, that's because I had to advertise it because it was the first time. You probably don't.
I advertise.
I need my validations from a click. I need people to hit the like button on me.
He's got like likes and, oh, way to go. Your career's blossoming. Been doing it 20 years, not even a thumbs up or something like that.
I'll remember Brady when he was here, but when he's moved on to greatness.
Oh, stop.
I remember back in 20, whatever year it is, 18.
Oh, stop.
All right, we got a lot to get to. Busy show today. Brady, tell everybody what's coming up this week and what's coming up today.
Well, remember the mistake of the day. If you want to get in, you always can. 802-655-6672. Yesterday, Arnie, our mistake of the day winner set a new record. They got in before the show even started. Because in the Sports Center, I said Happy Tuesday when it was really Wednesday.
Wow.
The second word was a mistake.
So that was the mistake of the
Thursday.
Day.
Today's Thursday. Oh, yesterday you're talking about.
Yeah. The mistake of the day is brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for what's coming up today, how worried are we about the Red Sox lineup? What are we seeing from the Yankees? Big deal, little deal, no deal at 4:35. Former NFL running back, Super Bowl champion, first round pick in the draft, Jamal Lewis of the Ravens is going to drop by at 5 o'clock. But first, the C's are going to the conference finals.
I'm already disappointed that we haven't gotten like 50 million Town Fair tire text lines. We should be getting them in right now. All the Celtic fans should be going ballistic. 802-655-6672. The only Town Fair tire text we got is from my wife that says, you didn't take the vouchers? Why not? So that's it. We should get all the Celtic fans to call in. That was a battle. When the Celtics had gotten, was it a 6-point lead? With about...
It was like 106 to 100, something like that.
No, it was like, I thought 102.96.
Okay, 102.96.
It was.
It was a 6-point lead, and I'm like, well, they got this.
They're going away.
Yeah, they're pulling away.
It'll be a 13-point win.
Yeah.
And
then it was tied up at 102. Then they were losing, I think it was 104, 102, and it was going back and forth. Philadelphia had about 3-4 shots to put this thing away. One of them was a 3-pointer, I think, by Redick. Up by two or three. I mean, it was just a classic battle. It's like playing in a pickup game, game point for both teams, and everybody misses their last shot like three times until somebody finally puts it in there. That was a battle. It was just, who was going to survive the longest. And give the Celtics credit. That was unbelievable.
It was exhausting. I was exhausted at the end of that game, and I wasn't even playing. I'm just sitting there watching the game. That was a series you look back and say, oh, the Celtics. If you had told me the Celtics won this series in five, I'd be like, wow, that was much easier than I thought. This was an absolute root canal. That was the hardest five-game series I may have ever
seen.
And, Rich, for all the bad things you said about Marcus Smart this year, I hope I hope you appreciate the last minute of that game.
That was unreal.
The tip-in that he got on the miss by Tatum at that point gave the that tied the game at one point.
Oh, he didn't have to tip it on the missed layup? No, not the Tatum missed layup. Who missed the layup wide open by himself?
Oh, was that Embiid?
No. For the Celtics.
Because Embiid missed a layup at the end when he got fouled.
Go ahead.
When Tatum missed the layup, Smart puts it in.
Yep.
Then he gets the assist to Tatum that gives the Celtics the lead at the very end of the game, which wound up being the difference maker in the game. Then he forces the turnover.
Yep.
Could have been a foul, but he's getting back down, forces the turnover.
That was a great play.
And then he steals the pass at the end. Marcus Smart was everything that you would hope for in the final minute of that game.
I will say it again for the 100th time. All I said about Marcus Smart is the guy can't shoot, and that's a problem. But every day that passes, they've got to figure out a way to keep this guy. I mean, you know, I've heard debates. Do you sign Rozier or do you sign Smart? And I never thought I'd say this, but Smart has to stay. That guy is as valuable a player as anybody on that team. And as bad a shooter as he is, even when he tries now to miss a free throw, it goes
in. That was crap. How about that?
But then classic Marcus Smart, what does he do? He hustles back down, and he plays defensive back and intercepts the pass, and they win the game.
Are we all in agreement that was the correct play, or are we kind of doubting that was the correct play?
I liked it.
I think it was the correct play because they didn't
try to miss it.
Yes. They didn't have any timeouts.
Right. And a one-point lead, you try to miss it, and Boston knows he's going to miss it on purpose, so they have the leg up. They have a chance to create some sort of clock-killing activities.
We were talking about this before the show. We didn't know the answer. When does the clock start? On the miss or on the touch?
When it's touched.
Okay, because you can't figure out when it's going to be missed. You could hit the rim, bounce, shatter around, roll around.
Correct.
And then fall off. You can't start the clock like that.
Correct. Yeah. It starts on the touch.
Okay, so you still had enough to maybe take a dribble or two and chuck it up if you got the rebound.
Well, they had wasn't it like 3 seconds?
Yeah.
I mean, they had 3 seconds.
But the
Celtics
had a huge advantage there knowing he was going to miss the shot on purpose. I suspect the Sixers probably were thinking he might, but the Celtics knew. So they were able to get at that ball if it had happened.
Was that Marcus doing that on his own, or was that Brad Stevens yelling, missed the shot?
I guarantee you Smart was not the decision maker.
Yeah, that was Stevens.
Because I didn't get to see him or if there was
There was no timeout or anything, but I'm sure it got dictated.
Okay, because I didn't know if he was yelling that or I didn't see. I'm assuming that it came from him. I don't think a player calls that on his own, to be honest with you.
And didn't this happen for the Celtics earlier in the year? Didn't Kyrie try to miss one against Houston and make
it? I'm not sure.
It was a Saturday night game on ABC. I think Kyrie tried to miss one and made it. I mean, look, it was a series full of unbelievable storylines. You had continued great play from Terry Rozier at home. You had Jason Tatum, who's making history now every time that he takes the floor. I mean, he had 10 of his team-high 25 points in the fourth quarter. So we've seen him get better in every phase of the game as he's gone on. He's been a good three-point shooter this year. He's been good scoring out of the gate. Now he's been good finishing games for this team. And oh, by the way, I mean, 7 straight games of 20 points or more, that's unbelievable. That's the second longest 20-point streak by a rookie in NBA playoff history.
Yeah. No, they had a good run. Unfortunately, people are not talking about how well the Celtics are playing. And there's proof of that. They're more talking about how Philadelphia choked and, you know, the process and all that. And not only that, I mean, talking about the Celtics coming in. Did you know, I mean, Stevens didn't even get a vote. Are we talking about that later?
Oh. We talked about that yesterday.
Oh, didn't even get a vote for Coach of the Year. I mean, so it goes to show you that he's coming in under the radar. The Celtics are coming in under the radar. But nationally, more people are talking about how Philadelphia, I don't want to say choked, but, you know, disappointing to the local fans than more so what the Celtics are doing.
If I'm Philadelphia, I'm mad about Game 3 more than Game 5. Game 3 was their chance to even, you know, get back in the series. And then, I mean, we'd be looking at a whole different situation if they hadn't blown that last couple of seconds in the overtime. But if I'm a 76ers fan, I'm absolutely thrilled with the year you just saw. I mean, that team is on. You talk about a team on the rise. It's going to be Boston and Philly forever in the East.
Well, I mean, they won 9 more games than they're over-under predicted. I think it was tied for the second highest in all of basketball. The Raptors won, I think, 10 more games than they were projected to win. Houston was also 9 games, but so they massively overachieved. They have a lot of cap space. J.J. Redick is really their only big free agent that they have. They'd obviously like to keep him, I would imagine, but they've got cap space. They hopefully can re-sign Redick. They're going to get, they're going to continue to be young, but also get more experience. And remember, they're going to add, essentially from scratch, the number one pick in last year's draft in Markelle Fultz, who didn't even scratch the surface this season. So if Fultz comes in next year and gives them anything, then they instantly get better there just by having a guy on their roster healthy.
They could have two of the biggest busts, perhaps in draft history. One, Markelle Fultz. No offense to the kids. I feel horrible about the injury. And no.
That was a huge bust.
Well, he got traded years ago.
Yeah, but,
right, but I mean.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Simmons because now, do you hear what Kobe Bryant said? He says if he was coaching, GM, whatever, and of course, take this with a grain of salt, because he's Kobe, he's the best, one of the best ever. He said if he was working with Simmons or whatever, this summer, that's it. Forget your jump shot. We're starting from scratch, like underhand. Starting from scratch like you're a little boy, and I'm going to have to teach you how to shoot all over again.
Yep.
How do you do that when you're in the NBA? I mean, who the hell says that? They didn't even make Lonzo do that. So, you know, he's not high on Simmons. He doesn't like him at all.
Well, look, the jump shot for Simmons is ugly. It looks like he dribbles primarily left-handed, but yet he shoots his free throws left-handed. He tries to shoot his jumpers right-handed. So he definitely has some quirks in his jump shot. But you know what? You're not going to be able to retool that entire jump shot. They say it takes 10,000 hours of something to perfect something. I mean, look at all the people that have tried to change mechanics that can't do it. Tim Tebow couldn't change the way that he threw a football, and it got him out of the league. Lonzo's not going to be able to completely retool his shot. Some people don't think it's as broken as others do, but you're not going to physically be able to retool that.
I don't. Well, that's Kobe. You know, Kobe just speaking to be Kobe, though.
No, but I mean Simmons. Obviously, the book is out on him. I mean, if he can't shoot beyond 5 feet, his whole game, as far as scoring goes, is underneath the basket, and that's going to come back to haunt him. And I mean, the numbers don't lie. When McConnell was the point guard in this series, they had a lot more effectiveness than when Simmons was at the point.
Were you talking about Simmons or Giannis? From Milwaukee, because both don't have the best outside shots. Both go to the bucket hard out there. Giannis probably a little bit better, but I mean, the first one that develops an outside jump shot is going to be, oh my goodness, how about that?
Giannis has a better outside jump shot right now. Yeah. He hit some fadeaways. He did hit a couple of long jumpers. Simmons didn't even hit a shot outside of the paint the entire series.
No, he
did not. I want to say he didn't even take a shot outside of the paint this entire series.
You think that Celtic fans are mad that Philadelphia is getting ripped more than the Celtics getting credit for not only getting credit for beating Philadelphia, but where they are now. And who knows? I don't think they'll, get by Cleveland, but who the hell knows what's going to happen?
No, I think knowing Boston fans, they're probably mad that they're not getting more recognition. Absolutely.
I mean, it's insane.
It's brilliant what they did. We'll talk about this later. How cool was it to see Drew Bledsoe sitting courtside yesterday?
Friend of the show.
That was cool. Now, you know what? I want to get Drew Bledsoe on. I know you had him on prior to Arnie and I getting here. We'll throw a little plug for his wine operation.
Yes,
that's key. And we'll see if we can get him on.
He could not have been a nicer human being.
By the way, he's going to create a wine for Terry Rozier.
Terry
Rosé. So that's going to be.
I like that.
So that's going to be Bledsoe's wine.
I like that. Steven Heinsberg, Al Horford's a freaking stud. Absolutely. He was. We didn't even mention his name. He's been just great all the way around.
He had a back down move yesterday, which was unbelievable to score late. Just going to the hoop. He continued to play good defense. He gives Brad Stevens a schematic advantage defensively almost nightly.
Ted Winooski, first mistake, was turning on Artie's mic. Nick in Plattsburgh, sorry to bust your bubbles, guys. Their run is done. Kings James, time now. So he's going with the Cavaliers out there, obviously.
He's probably right.
Yeah. Well, we don't know.
No. I mean, what? Right now, I have no idea what the Celtics are. It's what they're doing right now is unbelievable.
I'm taking the Celtics in seven.
Wow.
I will say it right now.
Wow. Look at that. He's not going against them this time. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, the Red Sox lose another tough one yesterday. How worried are we about the bottom of their batting order? Answer, very.
That's coming up next. You are in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Studies show that listening to 101.3 ESPN makes you more productive. And we'll prove it when we get around to it. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. I got to tell you, I just got a text from one of my guys over at Fox. He just writes this. I'm a warrior. I'm driving and texting and taking steroids all at the same time.
What?
Cali. I love it.
Yeah, he's in Cali.
So that's
just
so
imagine.
Cali.
That is unbelievable. Absolutely.
And that's
unbelievable.
Perfectly normal behavior there,
it
isn't
is,
it?
It is. The traffic will absolutely smother you to death. I had road rage just coming to work here. No, I did.
That damn two-way construction.
I was pulling up at the light, and I saw it was backed up. I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I made a U-turn and got on the 89. What is wrong with me?
Man.
I got road rage.
It's so funny how everyone complains about the traffic. I urge you to try L.A. any
please.
Given day.
You are pot calling kettle black.
Yeah,
you complain about the traffic.
You do it
well.
You're like, have you ever been downtown at 5?
Of course, I'd never been downtown at 5 because I'm always here.
But, I had to wait two lights.
No,
terrible.
I would say for a city of 40,000, the traffic at Burlington is pretty atrocious.
Shelburne Road at 5:30 is all.
40,000 population. And that's the traffic.
This lady who was driving Connecticut plates around Christmas time yelled to my wife, what kind of S-town is this with all the traffic?
From Connecticut.
And my wife's like, well, where are you from? And she said, some hoity-toity town in Connecticut. She goes, I'm sure there's traffic there. She's, yes, there is, but this is a small little town.
Oh, yeah. Everything around 84 and 91 and around Hartford is a real party.
I just love it.
Oh, my gosh.
Brady, what's going on with the Red Sox? They're falling apart. Did the Yankees clinch yet? I didn't see that.
Falling
that
apart.
Yes.
Like
25 and 11.
They are falling apart.
The Red Sox have lost two straight to the Yankees, and we'll get to the Yankees aspect after in about 5 minutes, but first, one of the things that is concerning, and Glennon Monkton yesterday told me I was too pessimistic and Debbie Downer about the Red Sox, but Rich, how worried are you about the bottom of the order? Because 7, 8, 9 in the order is an absolute just graveyard right now for Red Sox hitters. Eduardo Nunez is hitting .240 and doesn't get on base ever. Jackie Bradley Jr. is hitting .173. Sandy Leone's hitting .171, and Christian Vasquez is hitting .194. You can't be too thrilled with what's going on at the bottom of the order.
No, and I could use the excuse that it's happening with almost every team in the league, which is true. But with Boston, it's a different story because, I mean, they're so top-heavy. If they've got, like, four guys in that starting lineup last night hitting .330 or higher, the problem is when you put three guys in a row that are combining to hit .190 or .200, then that becomes a 1-2-3 inning, and you get two or three of those a game, and it starts to stack up. I mean, at some point, the Nunez thing surprises me. The other guy's not so much. We know Bradley can't hit. I mean, you know what he'll do? He'll go 5 for 5 tonight. He'll hit 3 home runs tomorrow. He'll hit about .420 for the next week. Or this, you know, this will happen at some point, and then he'll go right back down the down the tube. So I don't know what to do about him. But you can't let him play. Nunez is the surprise to me. Remember in the offseason when he was a free agent, I was like, come on, why is he a free agent? Grab him. He's
got a
valuable.
Great deal, 1 year deal on him. Right?
I mean, I thought he was great last year until he got hurt.
Yeah.
And he's the one that surprises me. He has done absolutely nothing.
I can't believe I'm saying this because I've been so kind of staunch against him, but this team needs Dustin Pedroia back. And
wow.
Yeah. No, it's
true. And I have worried about what Pedroia's impact on the clubhouse would be, and we've worried about his ability to stay healthy. But from a playing standpoint right now, this team needs Dustin Pedroia, and they need the good Dustin Pedroia, because if you can insert him, especially as TC tells us, he's probably not a two-hitter for you anymore. You can put him down at the 6 or 7 spot, and then the bottom of the order doesn't become the wasteland that it is now, and that does get Nunez then maybe doing what he is best suited for, and that's not playing every single day and being kind of your first guy off the bench and being your super utility guy, which is where he excelled last year.
You know, we criticized Cora after one game. Remember that first game when we were watching it down at RJ's? We're like, oh, my goodness, this is going to be a hell of a terrible
Joe
year.
Joe Kelly.
I want to explain something to you. If you're ever going to criticize Cora, it only could be one thing, whether you agree with him or not, and I know you guys kind of agree with him. The only thing you can debate is how he's putting the batting order. I told you last week, I said, that can't continue with the 8-9 down there. Matter of fact, some managers in the National League like to bat their pitchers at number 8.
Rafael Devers hit 8th yesterday.
Right.
So there was movement in the
bottom
order yesterday.
Finally, after we've been talking about it. But not only that, and I've made this case, I could be wrong, Buster yelled at me, you guys yelled at me, but a case can be made where Mookie Betts, your best hitter with the most home runs, RBIs, and batting average should not be batting leadoff. Whether you agree with him or not, at least it's debatable that the guy with the best batting average, home runs, and RBIs should not be batting leadoff. I got to be honest with you, you talked about Nunez. If you want to jumpstart somebody, move him up to number 2. And I know that's not fair to Benintendi, but you put a guy at number 2 and he's protected by 3, 4, and 5. it's got to raise his average. You got to do something. When your car doesn't start and you're driving a stick shift, what do? Rich, you put the car in the gear, you point it down the hill, and you pop the clutch. You got to get the car started. You got to pop the clutch, move Nunez to second. You can't keep it like this. It's not going to work.
And the thing is Nunez and Benintendi aren't any different right now. They're both hitting in the 240s. Benintendi's starting to show some power. I think he hit one last night.
The reason why you can't and they won't put Nunez up that high, Arnie, is because they're not going to roll with 4 to 5 right-handed hitters to start the order. You've already got Betts hitting leadoff. Then you've got Hanley, and you've got Martinez, and you got Bogarts. And if Moreland plays, then he's the only one that breaks that up. But he didn't play every day.
But you can't say they won't. You can't. You could say they won't do it again because they did it last year. And that's where now I know they didn't have Martinez and all that, but he did bat second, did he not? And he was very good at batting second, I believe. I know they dropped him down a few times, but you can't say they won't do it. They just might not do it again because the team has changed. He succeeded very much so at second.
He would only hit that high if Moreland's playing, and Moreland's not an everyday player. So, yeah, maybe you could see that occasionally, but that's not going
to get. Does it have to be right? You can't.
They're not going to go 5 righties in a row. They're just not going to do it.
I liked last night's lineup. I really did. And I think by putting Devers down there, that certainly helped, and he had 2 hits. The team had 6 runs and 12 hits. That should be enough. I mean, I looked at that lineup last night. You've got to find a way to keep Moreland in there. I mean, the guy's hitting .342. Granted, that's not going to last, but you've got to ride it well. You've got it. You've got too many guys hitting under .200 to leave a guy at .342 on the bench.
I bet you if we asked people in the Town for a Tire text line, what would you do about the batting order? If 10 people text in, I bet you we'd have like 8 or 9 different lineups.
Sure.
Because that's how much you can tinker with this lineup. And by the way, why did he wait so long? I mean, I know things were going well early, but you could tell he's trying to do something now. He's a little bit worried. He's trying to kind of like starting the economy. You want some stimulant there. That's what he's trying to do.
Well, you get Devers down there. And Devers has struggled over the last week or so. But, you know, he has hit okay.
Some power.
For a first-year, essentially, player, he's hitting .260 with 6 homers and 23 RBIs. That is obviously not horrible. But he started out so well that he has fallen back considerably. You move him down, maybe get him some more fastballs. That helps him. And then you help the rest of the order. But, yeah, it has been just a cavernous wasteland down there, and it can't continue right now.
And it just gets worse because, as we said at the top of this segment, I mean, you've got a situation where it's really glaring because you have – I mean, look at the batting order last night. You got 4 guys hitting .333 or higher, and these are everyday guys: Betts, Martinez, Bogarts, Moreland. They're all hitting well over .300.
Glennon Monkton disagrees with you guys. He says yesterday's question was about Moreland / Ramirez, not about the bottom of the order. You know what? Maybe yesterday, not about that, but eventually, it's going to be about the bottom of the order.
He said yesterday we had an argument. He called me too pessimistic, saying that Hanley and Moreland were going to regress. He's basically saying I agree.
Okay.
The bottom of the order is bad. Right, yesterday, I didn't agree with you.
Okay,
but I mean the point with Bradley and Vasquez is they're so good defensively, and what are the pitchers going to? I mean, do you run Sandy Leon out there every night to throw out 20% of the base runners, or do you run Vasquez to go out there and hit also, like Leon, .190 and throw out 40%. It's a dilemma that's not necessarily a bad thing.
You need to get rid of Blake Swihart.
Yeah.
Because he offers nothing on this roster now. They don't use him, so therefore, go and get something for him. Maybe that's a thing you can do to go and get some AAA depth pitcher. Okay? Yeah. Go and trade him to a team that could use him in the majors because he's got no minor league options left, and maybe you can bring back another AAA, 4A starter that can help you for all this depth that you need there.
Right. And they're talking about JT Realmuto as well from the Marlins, and that's a guy who can hit, he's a catcher.
He is very good, but again, but they have nothing to offer for him.
Right. Here's some 20-year-old in Portland who's hitting .107, so... Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, when there's no farm, there's nothing to give anybody.
By the way, Red Sox, 2 strikes now. They didn't get Matt Harvey. And who was their number one guy that I said, is there anybody that we could bring up? And you guys said, no. Well, I guess now we can't bring him up anyway.
Well, no, Jason Groom.
Well, the pitcher, the one that got
Jalen Beeks.
No, he's talking about Jason Groom. Jason Groom is 19 years old and now has Tommy John surgery.
Was he AAA?
No.
Okay.
He was in Lowell last year. I did a couple of his games and he was awful.
Well, he's years away.
No Matt Harvey. What did the Mets get in return? I don't remember.
Devin Mesoraco, a starting catcher.
And a big salary. I think he's making $18 million this year.
Get out of here.
$18 million for this year?
Maybe 2 years.
Get out of here.
Check that out.
So you're telling me the Mets took big salary in return just to get rid of...
I think, but check out the details of that trade.
The only reason I said that, well, the Red Sox should have gotten rid of one big salary if that's what the Mets were doing.
Mets Rocco had one really good offensive year as a catcher.
He is making $13 million.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Could you imagine? Now that proves my point. That's why I say you make a trade like that for Matt Harvey, who's making peanuts... And you could just rent him and get rid of one of your high-priced players, just like the Reds did.
But he's a free agent at the end of the year also.
That's okay, but that's why they took him. Then they're not going to take somebody that's got, 2-3 years left
right,
on the contract.
Right, so the Red Sox aren't getting rid of David Price for Matt Harvey.
Yeah, let's get Matt Harvey so he can go out there every fifth day and give up 9 runs.
Yeah, well, wishful thinking on still me trying to get rid of Price. I'm just dying to get rid of that guy. Brady, what's coming up next?
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Next, you're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and Wing.
Welcome back to the huddle. It's time for our newest feature.
Maybe this one will sweep the nation also.
It's time for Big Deal.
Rich, you guys are missing the point. This is a huge deal.
Little deal.
Oh, please, Arnie. This is nothing.
Or no deal.
You guys are both wrong. It's in the middle. How am I even still listening to you?
On 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We're all back together again. Brady, Rich, Arnie, back in studio in Burlington, Vermont.
Group hug.
Wow. I got to tell you, it was a long, long 2 weeks. I got to be honest with you. It's tough to be in L.A. for 2 weeks.
It was quick here.
Wow.
I'm happier back because it's far less buttons to push.
Yes.
It wasn't that tough to be away not looking at you guys. Maybe we could FaceTime it next time, but it wasn't that tough to be. Well,
do I look better than when you left?
Oh, you guys look chiseled.
Yeah.
Absolutely chiseled. Yeah. I'm the only one gaining weight around here.
You've clearly lost some weight.
Let's get the big deal, little deal, no deal. Oh, he was right on it. He had his finger on the button. I couldn't even surprise him.
Question number one. Nashville is the current leader in the clubhouse for the 2019 NFL draft site. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a little deal. I mean, I know the NFL draft is a big deal, but it's only a little deal when we talk about where it is, because I don't think it should be in Nashville. That doesn't get me going. It's not like you can see the Jet fans' faces with the, oh, no, what have you done? Or the Giant fans. It should be in two places every play, either in Philadelphia, well, three places, Philadelphia, New York, or Dallas, where the fans just get so dramatic that they start screaming. That's where it should be every year.
Did you put this one in there just to agitate me?
No.
Okay. Since the NFL draft makes no difference, obviously where it happens makes no difference. This couldn't be more of a miniature deal than it is.
Wow.
So it's that simple. You hate the draft, so therefore where the draft is means nothing.
No, I just don't care. Yes. I don't I don't know. I'll just to comment on it, Nashville doesn't seem like that kind of an NFL city, but as always, it comes down to money. And they're going to, the country music theme, and they're going to make Music City, and they're going to make a big deal out of it.
What happened if the draft was in Foxborough?
Foxborough? Boston.
You're like, yeah!
I mean, I could see. No. I don't care where it is. But I could understand if it was in Jacksonville or something, that might seem a little bit weird.
Why? I'll say it's a little deal. I think, like you said, Rich, it's going to be a good money-making opportunity. They're spreading it around, giving it to different regions, giving it to different places. I'm okay with that because it gives more fans a chance to go. Fans can't afford to go to the Super Bowl. Fans can't afford always to go to games. I don't know what the draft costs, but just being there, might be able to get some fans into the NFL experience that aren't usually able to. Question number two, Joe Tessitore has officially been named the new voice of Monday Night Football, replacing Sean McDonough. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Don't take this the wrong way. I'm going to say little deal because I think play-by-play announcers should be referees. If we don't talk about them, they did a really good job. I never understood all this love for one play-by-play announcer, all this hate for another play-by-play announcer. The only time I ever yell at a play-by-play announcer is when they're like, I don't know why it's not a first down or something when we're all yelling at the TV. It's because they did this and that and he was stepped out of bounds and you can't catch it. And he didn't pick up on that. So that's the only time I'm really yelling at the TV or if I'm watching an Arizona game and I know more than the announcers about Arizona basketball. I'm like, no, you idiot. He just came on the team. But other than that, I think most of them, for the most part, do a pretty good job, and I don't get aggravated with them. So, and I don't even remember who does what. If you ask me, who does like Thursday night football, Monday night football, right. Monday night baseball, I couldn't tell you.
And it's funny because maybe I'm just the old guy here. And I mean, for me, Monday night football means Frank Gifford, Dandy Don, and Howard Cosell. I mean, ever since then, it's been sort of this rotating. I mean, Al Michaels did, obviously, for a very long time.
Frank, Allen, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time. But now it just seems like it's this rotating door of different announcers. And what, now, Mike Tirico is what right now?
Tirico works at NBC. He hasn't been involved in ESPN for years.
Yes. He's my absolute favorite play-by-play guy when it comes to football. So I don't know. I don't even know who Joe Tessitore is. Has he been a big name?
He's been doing college football. Actually, he was really big in boxing for a long time.
Yeah.
But he's been big with college football. He's from Albany, New York.
Ah,
so
that's why you mentioned
and,
him.
And let me just a little small thing on there. He'll get half the money that some of their other talent will get, or less than that even.
And I will say I'm bummed to hear Sean McDonough's going. I think he's one of the truly good ones in the business.
I'll say it's a big deal because it's still Monday Night Football on ESPN. It's whether you love the slate of games or not, or you think there's too much football in prime time, Monday Night Football is one of the longest running programs in this country, and when it makes a major change, I think that's always going to be a big deal. Question three, Red Sox top pitching prospect Jason Groom is having Tommy John surgery. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Well, considering I didn't know about him until I just asked you about him 10 minutes ago, which I guess tied into this, I'm going to say no deal because I didn't even know he was on the Lake Monsters. I thought he was a AAA guy.
Lake Monsters.
Not the Lake Monsters. I'm sorry. I didn't know
the
he was a
spinners.
Yes, my bad. Yeah. I thought that he was a AAA guy that there was a chance that you could bring on up, but you guys tell me there's not a pitcher within 5 million miles that the Red Sox could bring up. So I'm going to say no deal because it really doesn't make a difference to the Red Sox point of view.
It's an extremely big deal. It's an extremely big deal. He was a first-round pick in 2016. He had some attitude concerns coming out of high school. So I'm sorry to say this now. The kid is 19 years old, and as of right now, it's been a total whiff on their first-round pick. And for a team with no farm system depth at this point, you can't afford to be whiffing on first-round picks. And so far they have. And, Arnie, the reason why it's also a big deal is because if they do want to acquire someone at the deadline, and since they have no farm system, this is about the only one of the only two guys that anybody would want, and now they can't go and trade him either.
How long from the time you're drafted in the first round to make it major league?
Well, he came out of high school. He didn't go to college.
Well,
so
give me. Well, a lot of them come out.
Well, he's 19 right now.
I mean, he was probably
really young at Lowell.
I mean, so he's got time to.
Oh yeah, he has time to get
develop,
good.
Yeah.
But the team could have traded him for an arm at this deadline, and now they can't. So it's a very big deal.
I agree with you. It's absolutely a big deal. Like I said, I saw him with Connecticut against Lowell a couple times, and he got lit up. But overall, he was pretty good at Lowell. But ever since then, he hasn't done anything. He got lit up at Greenville last year, and that's low A as well. I think that's middle A. But just remember the hype about this kid coming out of high school in New Jersey. He's unsignable. He could be a problem.
He ended up going like 18 or something instead of one.
Yeah, he was. I think he was a middle first round pick.
Yeah.
It's
like 16 through 18.
And everybody just went, "Oh my gosh, how did the Red Sox ever get him?" And they gave him an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
The kid was a flamethrower. So I think this is a big deal, and I think I agree with what you said about the dangling him as a trade possibility. I mean, now that's gone out there. But again, we've seen what happens with Tommy John surgery, especially the younger they have it done. This kid may be back throwing 100 miles an hour in about a year and a half.
Yeah,
who knows?
Not saying that he won't be good, but for right now, it's a huge deal. Question four here on the huddle. Brad Marchand spoke yesterday at the Bruins' end-of-season wrap-up and says he needs to clean up his act in a big way and be more mature starting next season. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Oh, I can't use him for clean up your act now. That's too bad, which was coming up next. You know what? It's a little deal because I kind of like it a little bit. First of all, it's not sanitary. You know, the whole licking thing, that's not very sanitary.
No.
I think you can catch a cold from that. You get some type of disease. But other than that, I think it gets under the other team's skin, and then they get off their game trying to come back at Marchand. I do think he needs to knock it out, find another way to get under people's skins, but that's going a little too much.
Yeah, I will call it a little deal. It's a medium deal, so I have to go with little. But the licking thing just... Look, that's very simple to stop doing. My problem is the stuff that gets him suspended for 4, 5, 6 games, goon stuff. This is a guy who, if he hadn't done that this year and he'd played a full 80-plus games, would have scored 100 points or close to it for this team. When he is out there, he is one of the best scoring forwards in all of the NHL, and the Bruins can't afford for him to go off on this stuff and lose 5, 6, 10 games a year every year out of him.
It's a big deal. He also spoke about wanting to be a better leader for this team. He idolizes Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara. He wants to be one of those leaders for this team, so I thought that was a good mature stance, so I think it's a big deal. But also, if you read in between the lines, he said also, if I have to cut some of that stuff out and take away 15 points a season, maybe that's worth it. So he thinks that a lot of his value is tied into the way he plays. If you take that away from him, then is he still the same player? So I think it is a big deal no matter how you slice it. Last question. The Celtics, they're undefeated at home this season. Is that a big deal, little deal, no deal?
No, that's a big deal because they say a series doesn't start until the team wins on the other team's court or until you win a road game.
And that sure was the case in that Sixers series.
And it's not happening to the Celtics because nobody's winning on their home court, so obviously that's a humongous deal. They have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals, so I think it's working for them.
Well, it's a very big deal because although it didn't work for them last year and they were in the same situation with Cleveland coming to town, people forget they have home court advantage coming up as the higher seed in the series, the Eastern Conference Championship Series. Is Cleveland going to come in here and go 0-4 on the Garden Court? I highly doubt it. But if they're going to stay undefeated, then that's a good thing. That means they're going to the finals because they have somewhere between 3 and 4 home games coming up in this series.
It's a little deal. It's an impressive staff, but LeBron is coming in, and I still think you're going to have to win a game on their court. I do think the Celtics win this series, but I don't know if they're going to take all. I think they're going to win it in 7, but I don't know they're winning all 4 at home.
Wow. Larry Bird better have a big game. That's all I can say. Brady, what's coming up at Champlain Valley Game Night?
Coming up at Champlain Valley Game Night, we'll talk about the Giants. Can Saquon Barkley himself justify his draft selection?
Well, let's get the cleanup your act as we finish off hour number one. That is next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, show moving right along on this Thursday. What day is it today, Rich?
What is it, May 9th? May 10th.
See, that's why I say it over and over again, so you could remember. All right, let's get the cleanup your act, Brady. Do we have any music for that?
Keep this.
Wow. Look at that look.
Yeah, he gives,
wow, like, if looks could kill.
All right, let me give you the first one. I don't want to get too specific because it's like a court story. Did you guys see the story about Skechers and Adidas?
No.
Skechers, the footwear company, they're suing Adidas in federal court. That's actually going to go on today. That's going to happen. They're claiming that the competitor created false advertising and unfair competition by funneling hundreds of thousands of dollars in secret payments to high school and college basketball players.
Yeah.
They say they have proof.
Wow.
They say they have proof. You don't go to federal court without proof. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they got enough that they made it to the federal court. We'll see what happens. I don't want to bore everybody, but the tennis shoe companies, they need to clean up their act. They're destroying it. I don't know what really goes on to Nike and Adidas, Skechers, Under Armour, but I know it's bad stuff is going on. That's why we see these lawsuits all the time.
My cleanup your act goes to our intern, Alec, who just broke out some sort of fish meal.
Wow.
In this enclosed studio.
No!
I have no idea what that was, but that needs to never happen again.
Clean up your act.
Clean up your act, intern Alec. No fish during the show.
You have tuna.
Before the show.
Also disgusting.
You have the option to be able to get away from it because we're not on until
also
4
Also disgusting.
Yeah, how about this yesterday? I have tuna sandwich. It's just all over the place. I mean, tuna, mayo,
man.
Everything, all over. And the owners of the station walk in. First time I've seen them in a year. And, I mean, you should have smelled this place. It was tuna.
And they don't like you.
Well, that could be an issue.
My cleanup your act goes out to how about the about 9-year-old kid who threw back the home run ball yesterday at Yankee Stadium?
That was great.
I think it was Andrew Benintendi who hit it. I don't think it was the Hanley Ramirez one. I think it was the Benintendi homer. That was not great.
I loved it because he didn't even think about it. He just immediately threw it back.
Oh, see, I thought it was his dad in his ear who said, you got to give that back. And if that was the case, clean up your act to the dad, too. I would have given my left arm to catch a home run ball or a foul ball at a pro ball game. You throw it back? Oh, come on.
The reason I didn't mind it is because he looked like he fully intended on doing it the minute it landed in his hand. I mean, if he's standing there going, dad, I don't want to do this, and the dad's yelling at him, that's a different story. He looked like he had a purpose.
By the way, a little side note, Brady, did you see who replaced you on CNN as their guest today?
No.
the four-year-old boy who ran real slow from third base to home. Did you see the video of that?
No.
That's told hilarious. Him he ran like in slow-mo, and nobody can get him. And he would just do that all the way down the baseline.
It took him three minutes to get home.
3-4 minutes, and they put him on CNN, Good Morning America. He's getting prizes. I can't believe you didn't see that. That was unbelievable.
Nope, I'll just wait until they call me
again. Oh, wait. You got to look up the video of this kid. It's hysterical.
Replaced by a four-year-old.
Yeah, there you go. Hour one in the books. Brady will have a Sports Center update. We'll get you ready for hour two. That's coming up next year in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in, and the huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, good afternoon. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN, hour two of the show. Mere moments away from Jamal Lewis, former NFL running back. We'll hear from him. Jeez, Brady, what did you say wrong? Everybody jumping on you, the mistake of the day, for crying out loud.
I don't know. I did say earlier that the Celtics would play their game one on Monday. It will be Sunday, which I don't understand at all. The Western Conference semis ended a day earlier than the East. And then they're going to start their series for the finals a day after. So they're getting two extra days in the Western Conference over the East. I don't understand that.
And there's also a situation in that series. I'll have to see what it is. But I think there's a four-day – well, here it is. Sunday, the Celtics-Cleveland, game one Sunday, then Tuesday. Then they do not play game three in Cleveland until Saturday.
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah. Tuesday to Saturday, no games.
And yes, we know the Celtics were undefeated in the playoffs. In the play, we understand that.
At home.
Yes, at home. At home. Oh, well, we almost
be very specific for these folks.
Real quick, I just want to ask you something, because I was thinking about this off sports. You know, when it comes to picking up stuff, you order something, I don't tip when I take something out. I say, forget about this.
Nope.
Mike, you tip on takeout?
No, I do not.
Yeah, of course not. My kid runs a register at a restaurant, so you order your food, then you go sit down, and they bring you the food, you know, but you have a number.
Right.
He made $91 in tips.
Oh, I wouldn't tip that.
A tip jar?
Day?
Yeah, yes, one day.
Where does he work? I want to go there.
Can you believe that? I go, what are you? He's like, I'm real nice to the old people, and they tip real well.
Yes. Oh, well, that's good. So yeah.
He's earning it.
If you're buttering him up.
Well, but he has to split all those tips with like everybody else there.
And who aren't being nice to the old people.
Yeah, but I just thought, I'm like, you make more than people that you wait tables. You make more tips than that. Unbelievable.
We're in the wrong business.
And do remember that mistake of the day. Yes. You're up for that baseball cap to 101.3 ESPN exclusive, thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time.
And you're going to have to help me with my grass outside my yard. Because
me?
Yeah, because everybody has beautiful green grass.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And mine is white from the dogs urinating on it. And it looks like we're hillbillies.
Right.
And everybody has beautiful. So I don't even know how to. Do I like dig it up and get like that blue seed thing and spray it all over or something like that?
No, you're asking a person who has the exact same dilemma. And of course, you live in the box in the field where everybody insists on pouring 9 pounds of chemicals all over the lawn so that they have basically a golf green.
I've got to chemical it up. I got to do that now, right away.
You should get a rototiller and just take it all out.
I don't even know what that is.
takes up your entire life.
Even I know what a rototiller is.
Scott Gard, isn't that seeds? I've seen the commercials, right? Scott Gard? Or is that stuff you spray on your furniture?
Just get rid of your dog. That'll solve it.
Wow. Look at you, Rich.
Please direct all complaints to Rich Haskell. That's Rich.
Everybody has beautiful green grass, and we've got this... You know, the big white thing.
Oh,
I
know it well.
Size of a football field.
Same
thing. So there you go.
I know it well, believe me.
Brady, who's coming up right now?
Yeah, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Let's find ourselves a guy we've never spoken to, a guy I'm excited to speak to. Former NFL running back, played for the Ravens and the Browns. He was a Super Bowl champion, the number 5 pick in the 2000 NFL draft, and once had a 2,000-yard season. It's former Ravens and Browns running back Jamal Lewis. Jamal, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How about you guys? Thanks for having me.
We're good as well. We appreciate you joining us. We talk about the draft being in the rearview mirror. You got to announce one of the Ravens' picks this year at the draft. Pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it was cool. It was the fourth round. It was a fourth round pick, I think it was. It was kind of a surprise. I didn't know I was going to be calling the name. I'm happy I didn't, though, because you know, the big part about that is getting the name right. And I think I got a good one. I forgot. I think the kid was from UCLA. I forgot his name already. But he was from UCLA, and I had Jonathan Ogden sitting there with me as well. So one of his, you know, from his alma mater.
We got a lot of fans up here that are Patriot fans, but also a lot of Giant fans, and they were happy about the selection of Saquon Barkley, number two. As a guy who was a running back picked in the top five, how do you respond to people who say, oh, don't ever pick a running back that high?
Well, when you got a running back like him, you know, with his size, his speed, and just his ability to change the game, I think you have to go with him. You know, he's not your average running back. You know, he's not the same back like, you know, the scat back, you know, and just an average running back. You know, he's a game changer. And he also, you know, when you have a struggling quarterback in Eli Manning, you know, you need a guy like that that can control the ground game in order to take a lot of pressure off of him. So I think that was a wise pick by the New York Giants.
How has the running back position evolved from the time you played until now? I mean, you carried the ball 300 times or more, four times in your career. Only one guy did that all of last season. It seems like it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah, it has changed a lot. You know, you went more with the running back by committee, you know, nowadays. But at the same time, I think that's due to the versatility and, you know, the durability of the running back position. You know, when I was playing, you had a featured back that pretty much was a first, second, third down back that came out sparingly just to take a breath and get some water, and that was it. They kind of control that ground game. But nowadays, you know, they want more explosive plays, and they do that with the passing game. So, you know, you take a smaller running back and you're able to get him lined up against a linebacker and create that mismatch, and you get that five-yard throw downfield that's like a five-yard run. But now I think it's, you know, it's evolving again and going back to, you know, the ground game and those feature backs like Barkley. You're starting to see that. So, but, you know, I don't think the running backs in college are being groomed and raised the same way as they were when I was coming out.
Jamal, as I said, a lot of Patriot fans up here, we carry the Patriots on our station, and they won multiple Super Bowls in the time you were playing. But I look back at the AFC in the time that you were playing, and I say, man, those Ravens teams had unbelievable battles with both the Titans and the Steelers. Did you hate those teams more than the Patriots, even though the Pats were winning Super Bowls?
Oh, yeah, you hated those. You hated those because, you know, those were those knockdown, drag-out games. You know, the AFC North is a very tough division, and I think it's very tough because of your run game. You had Bettis, you know, guys like that when I was playing. Bettis, you had with the Titans, Eddie George. You know, you had guys like that was carrying the load, and the defenses were more stout. You know, you didn't have small linebackers. You had some 250, 260-pound linebackers that was coming down, filling the gap and filling the hole, you know. So that's, you know, it's changed, you know, whatever. But, you know, you've got guys like, you know, the Patriots where it's more of a finesse game, but they can play very physical, but it's a finesse game. And you got to – it's more of a coaching game more than the players, especially when you're going up against Belichick.
If I'm not mistaken, you never played against the Patriots in the playoffs. What was the perception of the Pats in your locker room back those days?
Oh, yeah, with the Patriots, I think they became a big rival of ours. I never played against them in the playoffs, but I did play against them regular season or whatever, but at the same time, it was they became a rival. You know, they really did become a rival because you just really disliked the Patriots. You disliked Tom Brady. You disliked Belichick. And you disliked that defense because they were cocky. You know, they were the winners, and they were the team to beat. So, you know, you felt like you had something to prove, and you had to go in there and get it done.
Jamal Lewis, former NFL running back, played with the Ravens and Browns, was a Super Bowl champ, a top five pick in the NFL draft, and rushed for 2,000 yards plus in one season. How did you feel physically after that year?
Oh, I couldn't wait for that year to be over. I can tell you that. I think when we got into the playoffs and we played the Titans, You know, I knew that it was going to come down and put 9 or 10 men in the box, and that's what I was going to see that entire game. And if we would have made it, you know, past that round in the playoffs, it would have probably been the same thing. And I was beat up. You know, I was beat up. You know, 2,066 yards on the ground, you know, and as the feature back, and you knew I was going to get it, and we was going to run it 25, 30 times a game. It got tough, you know, but I got back in the saddle, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later after the season, and started getting my body back in condition because, hey, that's what I like to do. I asked for the ball, and they gave it to me, and, you know, we did what we had to do with it. So, you know, you feel beat up and banged up, but at the same time, as a runner, you know, it's just like a vehicle, man. You got to run it, you know, especially a high-powered vehicle like, you know, like myself, I would consider myself. You know, you got to keep it running, and you got to push it to the floor.
Was there ever a guy that you remember thinking, man, I really don't want to meet that guy one-on-one in open space? Was there ever a linebacker, a Brian Urlacher type, or somebody you were like, ugh, I can run through anybody, but I don't know if I want to run through that guy?
I think more like, you know, at Denver they had Al Wilson, who's one of my old roommates. You know, he was a stout guy, but I don't know. It was more playing those Steelers, man. You had Ferrier, you had Foote, you had Porter. You know, those guys, you didn't want to face them. That was more of a competition for me, you know. And I knew that if I could come out of that game with 89, 90 yards, I had a great day.
You won a Super Bowl your rookie year, beat the Giants. Take me back to what it was like winning that Super Bowl. That was Trent Dilfer against Kerry Collins, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, it was great. You know, I was a rookie at the time, and just going into a game like that, into that atmosphere, you know, the biggest thing you wanted to accomplish was a win. And I think with that year, we had momentum on our side anyway. We had a great defense in Ray Lewis and Rod Woodson and Sarah Gusa and those guys. And our offense, you know, we did put up a bunch of points, but we did make a lot of mistakes. And that was the good part, you know, Shannon Sharp being able to catch the ball and us being able to run it well and just do our job, you know. I think we had momentum, like I said, going into that game. And it was good to go out and for Stokely to catch that ball across the middle and take it to the house. When we did that on the first play, not the first play, but, you know, that first series, I said, oh, we got this one. And because we knew we only had to give our defense 10, 14 points, and they were going to have our back.
You know, after your time in Baltimore ended, you went to Cleveland. What was the motivation behind going to play for the Browns? Was it you wanted to stick it to Baltimore and play them twice a year? Was it a financial thing, a playing time thing? What was the motivation to go to Cleveland?
Well, I think, you know, I still wanted to play. You know, I still wanted to play. I didn't have too many offers out there, but then Phil Savage was the general manager over there. He came from the Ravens, and he knew me, and he brought me in. Anthony Lynn was a running back coach. He had confidence in my ability and what I could do. I knew I could still play, and, you know, they had a young team. But, you know, I just felt like, you know, with Phil, I trusted Phil, and I wanted to go in to play for him, and it was a good fit. I kind of knew the division, and I did want to play against the Ravens just to let them see what they lost.
Former NFL running back Jamal Lewis, a 2,000-yard season under his belt, a Super Bowl champion, is well with us on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Your experience playing in Cleveland, you had a lot of success, ran for 1,000 yards plus two of those 3 years in Cleveland. They've become the punching bag of the league, but the laughingstock of the league. But what was it like on the ground? Did you see the organization and think, man, I know why they're falling short, or did you enjoy your time there?
I did enjoy my time there, but when you're coming from an organization like the Ravens, which is a first-class organization, and you go to an organization like, you know, the Browns, where you really don't know what to expect because you was with one team for so long, you know, when I got in there, you kind of noticed it. You know, it was more leadership. It was more leadership and just kind of how they handle business and the chain of command and just how everything trickled down from the top. You know, I think that was the biggest issue. You know, the fans ran the team, and sometimes the players ran the team. So there was really no leadership there. You know, Romeo was a great coach, but he was more of a coach that needed, you know, veteran players around him. You know, then when Mangini came in, that's when it really fell short. Mm-hmm. So that was more of the issue there. And I think, you know, like I alluded to, it was more leadership than anything else.
Jamal, let's get you out of here on two questions. A lot of people talk about NFL players and how they feel post-career. As a guy who took a lot of hits through the middle of the field, how do you feel physically today?
Oh, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good. You know, my knees feel good. You know, I've had about 5 surgeries, so you know, I have a few aches and bruises, whatever. But you know, as far as the head is. It's feeling pretty good or whatever. You know, I don't have that many issues or whatever, but I did end my career on concussions or whatever. But I try to stay busy with business and just try to keep it moving day to day and take my kids to their games and their activities and things like that, and taking them to school every day. That, you know, that keeps me going. It keeps me motivated.
And what is the business you're working with? Yeah, what's the second calling for Jamal Lewis?
Well, actually, you know, it's good timing because today I just launched a platform called Ignite My Football, where basically we give kids, you know, that are trying to be recruited out of college and out of middle school and high school, just trying to be noticed. We give them a chance to go in and create their own content and create their profiles and push their content out, you know, so colleges and universities can go in and view their film and everything, and not just from game film, but you know, the work that they put in, you know, outside of game, you know, the workouts in the training room and the different drills and different training that they do outside of the game that, you know, kind of go unnoticed. You know, I was one of those guys that, hey, I worked hard, you know, in the sand pit, and I did a lot of training, you know, that went unnoticed. But when I hit the field, it showed. But at the same time, nobody knew, you know, where that actually came from. So giving these kids kind of a time to shine and show their workout ability and their work ethic and everything else, and let college coaches and recruiters actually see that, that can help them, you know, get noticed.
As a guy who played college baseball, I love hearing that stuff because I know how important some of those connections and some of those liaisons can be between player and college. Jamal Lewis, former NFL running back, won a Super Bowl with the Ravens, a top 5 pick in the draft. Jamal, we appreciate the time. We'd love to have you on again sometime.
Hey, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Good to hear from Jamal Lewis, Super Bowl winner, too. So
2,066 yards in one season.
Mojo Milton said, could you guys just thank Jamal Lewis for me and every other fantasy football league owner that won the league in that year that he had for 2,000 yards. So there you go there. Yeah, I think he must have been the number one fantasy football guy that year. I'm just guessing, Eddie. I'm just assuming that.
He had 1,000 yards or more in 7 of his 9 years. And even though Cleveland was so bad, has been so bad for so long, as I said, 1,000 yards in 2 of those 3 years that he was in Cleveland. And you're talking about, I mean, I think he was playing with Brady Quinn, and I mean, that was a... They're all down times for Cleveland.
He had more rushing yards than every running back in the history of the Patriots, I think. You could add them all up. And
yeah, go ahead. Have your fun.
Wow. You got a running back now, that's for sure.
What'd you think about him saying that he didn't like Tom
Brady?
Yeah,
I loved it. Well, you just said Brady, Belichick, you know, the whole crew out there. Obviously, they were the winners, and he wanted to get by them. So, yeah, I loved it, though. I love when he says I didn't like them.
I liked it, too, because it was honest and authentic. But also, they didn't play him in the playoffs.
They didn't. I heard you ask him that.
You remember those battles that the Ravens used to have with the Titans? And it was Steve McNair and Eddie George against Ray Lewis and Jamal Lewis. And then you throw in Pittsburgh with, as he said, Joey Porter and Jerome Bettis and then a young Ben Roethlisberger at that time. It was pretty you talk about an AFC North that was a bruising AFC North. That was it.
Right. That's the true black and blue division right there.
By the way, that's what they're trying to do with Sony Michel, try to give him a running back like him so they could take some of the pressure off Tom Brady. Could you imagine if he turned into something like that, huh?
Well, based on what you're saying, he's going to run for about 4,000 yards in his rookie year.
I compared him to what, Eric Dickerson? Was that my...
Sony Michel? Yeah, actually, I did hear that.
Oh, did you?
Good luck with that. Let's hope you're right.
That's my analogy. I hope nobody else took it, for crying out loud. I got that.
Well, Eric Dickerson's one of the other guys who ran for 2,000 in a season. So
I didn't know. Did you miss the spot when you were gone? I talked about this a little bit a couple of days ago, but the Patriots signed an undrafted free agent by the name of Ralph Webb, running back from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
And they gave him a $70,000 guarantee, which is one of the biggest undrafted free agent signings of this offseason. I bet you Ralph Webb has a real chance at making this team, and if it's Rex Burkhead and James White and Sony Michel and Ralph Webb, then that means that both Jeremy Hill and Mike Gillisley are going to get cut.
Well, I knew Gillisley was going to get cut. I told you guys that even before the season started. I said they're going to get a running back.
Well, once they drafted Sony Michel, I think that opens up for Gillisley to get cut. Jeremy Hill, I think, is the guy that falls on the sword if this undrafted free agent Ralph Webb makes the team.
You know, you guys called me crazy. Remember when I suggested they were going to take another running back? in the draft. Well, yes, they went and get themselves just a free. They decided to go undrafted free agent. But I told you this was the draft for them to get rich at running back. That's exactly what they're doing.
Says the guy who picked the Dolphins to win the AFC East
and Giants. Giants on the other side. Don't
I just want to bring you back to earth because
yes,
you've come back with kind of a big head
yes,
here from the West
Coast. Well, I've done pretty well on my picks. There's no doubt about that. Brady, what is coming up next?
You have?
I have. I haven't done well. Well, with the pick, really. Wait, I haven't done well.
I mean, I just picked the Sixers to beat the Celtics in six games.
I did well in the draft.
Yes, you did well in the draft.
I did well in, like, who's coming, who's going, who is over, valued, like Cooks. I told you
except
that was
except for the fact that Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen didn't go 1-2, you did very well in the draft.
And they went guaranteed a year and a half ago.
They went 3-11 or something like that.
Close. That was a year and a half ago, though. Give me a little bit of credit on that, for crying out loud. Brady, what are we going to cover up next?
Kyrie Irving's old team made the conference finals without him. Kyrie Irving's new team made the conference finals without him. Have we overvalued Kyrie Irving?
We'll get into that next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3.
Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Phone's going crazy. They want to win the ultimate fan experience. I love it.
Who won?
It was Matt from North Ferrisburg.
Oh.
Matt in North Ferrisburg.
A beautiful place to be on a nice day.
Yeah, remember that ultimate Fenway fan experience. Here's how it works. Remember, this is what you win. You're going to win that premium box seats. You and a guest to Red Sox Tigers on Tuesday, June 5th. You're going to get a hotel in Boston that night. You're going to get an exclusive tour of Fenway Park, and you're going to get the chance to be on field for batting practice. So, Rich, you come on every morning.
Yes, bright and early, or at least early.
During Golic and Wingo, and you give the Red Sox player of the day.
Yes.
And then, at some other point during Golic and Wingo,
yep,
at some point during the middle of the day, and at some point during the huddle, we will play that cue to call, and all you have to do is call in with the player of the day that you talked about.
Right, and today that would be?
Louis Tion.
Today, no. It was Hanley Ramirez.
Oh!
It was Hanley.
I was close.
So, if you want to win,
Louis Tion.
We actually had a couple of people call and get it wrong, so I'm trying to help you guys out. So, if you want to get the player of the day correct, you need to be listening to Golic and Wingo pretty much between 6:45 and 8:15, I would say.
Ooh, he's narrowing it down for you.
Wow.
That's when you want to listen to Golic and Wingo. And, Rich, at some point in that time frame tomorrow, you will come on with the player of the day.
Yes. It's very simple. Basically, this is a contest where if you listen, you win.
Wasn't Ed Figueroa? Oh, he's a Yankee.
Did he ever play for the Red Sox?
No, he was a Yankee. He was a Yankee.
I only know Nelson Figueroa, the old Phillies reliever.
No. Ed Figueroa, the pitcher for the Yankees.
Number 31.
Yeah, there you
Why
go.
Do I know that?
I have no
That's
idea.
That's ridiculous. What's your name again?
Brady, let's get to Kyrie. Kind of interesting stuff. I can see how people could think of this either way. So go ahead and talk about that.
Well, Kyrie Irving, look, he left Cleveland so that he could be the man, right? He left so he could be the guy. So does it say anything about him that his old team reached the conference finals without him? And does it say anything that his new team reached the conference finals without him? He wanted to be the man, but was he that important after all?
Well, I know people are going to look at it and go, oh, you see. I actually brought this up with you guys like a month ago. And you're probably like, what are you talking about? We didn't know they were going to make it this far a month ago. But you remember when I said, what about Gordon Hayward? I mean, look what his old team is doing without him.
Yeah.
They became one of the hottest teams and one of the most exciting teams in basketball. And they really didn't get a whole heck of a lot in return for him. You could say the same thing about Golden State, which I think John St. Alban said, are the Warriors better when, Curry's out and they won their first, or if they would have been out two rounds? The answer is no. They're playing good basketball because of Brad Stevens, and obviously the whole team is picking it up together, but I don't think they're better without Kyrie or Brendan Hayward. That being said, I'm not so sure. I would still give Kyrie the max contract.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to consider the fact that they're in this position where they have home court advantage in this series coming up to go to the championship round against Cleveland because of the fact that they were so good during the season. And a lot of that had to do with Kyrie Irving playing really, really well. And in some nights, I mean, remember a couple of those games he'd go off for like 40. He had one game, I think he had 47 or 48. Just There were a lot of games when he completely took over the game, and they won solely because of his presence on the court.
In terms of Cleveland being able to get back to this point, I don't think you could look at it and say this team was better without Kyrie Irving. I think you have a couple different things at play. I think you have LeBron, who played an unbelievable rate. He also took no days off in this season.
Not one.
He played an unbelievably high output. Without Kyrie Irving there, you had more players willing to play the subsidiary roles and willing to deviate to him so that he could do those things, whereas LeBron and Kyrie had to work together on who was going to be the alpha male on any given day. I think Kobe Altman deserves some credit for making that deadline deal to go out and get a Rodney Hood and a Jordan Clarkson and go and bring in Larry Nance and those guys. So I think there was some, you know, even though Hood has kind of fallen out of favor, I think those moves helped out at least initially, and to get a George Hill, I think everybody deserves a little bit of piece of credit more so than Kyrie getting blamed.
Right, and the thing was, Kyrie was LeBron's Scottie Pippen, as I look at it. You know, they didn't win as many championships, obviously, together, but I mean, you had to have that other guy, and that's been the problem for Cleveland all year long, is Kyrie was not there. That Scottie Pippen was not there. Love was, as usual, hurt, and nobody else was really stepping up to be that second guy, so LeBron just had to do it all himself.
John in St. Albans said, who would have had home court advantage, Celtics or Warriors? No way Kyrie's overrated. Warriors made the conference finals. No, Curry. Is he overrated? Which is what I brought up earlier. Just because a team goes far without their superstar doesn't mean they make them a better team without that guy.
Right, and I look at Golden State as, well, you lose a Curry, but you've still got a top three player in the entire NBA to fall back on. What do the Celtics have to fall back on? They have Rozier and a couple of 20-year-olds.
The other thing that's different about the Celtics, and it's not a knock on Kyrie, it's just that the team is forced to play more of a team game. Not that Kyrie is a selfish player, but he's so dominant that in big situations, the team will defer to him to try to bail them out. This team doesn't have somebody to do that, so you have five guys, in some cases seven, eight guys on any given day, who have to be ready to have their numbers called. They are hitting shots, and it was amazing within the first couple of games in that series against the Bucks, you started hearing about ball movement numbers in which the Celtics were passing the ball, you know, 100 more times than they had in the average regular season game, and that's because Kyrie wasn't there, so they have developed a whole new offense with Kyrie not there. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just different.
It was like last year when Isaiah Thomas would sit out. All of a sudden, you didn't have the guy taking 24 shots every game, and you had to figure something else out. You had to run your offense through somebody else, and it became more of all hands on deck.
Zach in Bristol, Celtics will beat the Cavs in six.
Ooh, I hope
next year,
right,
with Irving and Haywood back, they will dominate.
Yeah, I'm not the only Boston sports fan that's very excited about the Celtics next year.
Yeah, Tom Fair Tire text line if you want to get your picks in, 802-655-6672. I may have to go with the Cavs in seven in this one. I think it's going to be a tough battle. This is going to be a good series.
I've said all along, it's sort of like when the Penguins went down the other day. I'll believe it when I see it. And now it happened. Pittsburgh's gone. Washington has exercised those demons, and we move on in the NHL. But, man, Cleveland, you never count LeBron out. I don't care what happens. And now you start seeing Love stepping up. Kyle Korver's hitting his bombs from all over the place. J.R. Smith is playing well. Hell, Tristan Thompson even showed up in the last series against Toronto.
The thing that I think is going to be the key in this series is how the Celtics defend all the players you just talked about. I'm okay with LeBron going for 37 a night, but what we can't have is Kyle Korver going for 21,
right,
and you can't get J.R. Smith going for 19.
And Love.
And you can't get... Yep. Look, if LeBron and Love are going to combine for 70 points, that's one thing, but I can't allow those extra role players to come in and crush me, because if they're going to try to sell out on limiting LeBron, then he's going to kick out and J.R. Smith is going to hit wide open threes. I can't allow that to happen. I would let LeBron get his points and try to just make sure I'm stopping the three-point threats that you mentioned in Korver and Smith.
Can you imagine if the Celtics get to the championship and have to play Golden State? Can you imagine? I'm wondering what the ratings are going to be like if that's must-see TV, because as it is now, the Western Conference is must-see TV. Look, the Eastern Conference, if it wasn't for LeBron, people would really be bummed out. It's really LeBron against – who are they playing again?
I think the Celtics are a very interesting national story right now.
Oh, no. I'm telling you they're not. The biggest name on the Celtics right now, Brad Stevens.
I'm not talking about big names. I'm talking about their story.
The biggest story name on that team, Brad Stevens.
I will be in the middle of both of you. Rich, I think you are right. I think the Celtics being the lovable underdogs against a Warriors, a Rockets team that either dominated the last several years of the NBA or dominated this season in Houston's case. I think that's an appealing storyline. But if game one comes out and the Celtics get beat by 27, then it doesn't matter anymore because people think that's the rest of the way the series will go. If the Celtics came out and won game one or lost by four or something like that, people will remain interested. But if the Celtics were in the finals and get crushed in game one, right, then I think that goes away.
But they're 7-0 at home, and they are at home for the first two games. Yeah. I'm feeling like the chances are pretty good they're not going to lose a 113-81 kind of a game.
I'm talking about in the finals.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the semis.
What? No. I think
because he's saying that Boston doesn't get any interest nationally in the series against Cleveland.
No, he's saying they don't get it. You're saying they don't get interest nationally if they went to the finals.
Either way, it could be either way. I don't think they're going to get the interest now. I think it's all about Cleveland. Matter of fact, think about this for a second. If you're a neutral fan, your team's been eliminated, like mine. I'm a Knicks fan. What are you saying? Are you whose team are you jumping on? You're going, I like Cleveland because I want to see LeBron win. You're either on the Golden State bandwagon, or you're like, you're anti-Golden State, so you want to see Houston win. How many people on Boston's bandwagon? Zero? I mean, seriously, if you did a percentage, Boston would get the one percentage and be in fourth place out of that.
Disagree. I think the people I think the people that are tired of LeBron want to see somebody beat LeBron, and it would be even greater if you can adopt this NCAA tournament-style lovable underdog.
And I think the David against Goliath theme is here, too, and I think that makes Boston very appealing. I really do. And it's funny that it's David against Goliath and the massive underdog. The David is the team with the home court advantage.
Yeah.
I don't think they could do it again. Win every game at home. That means they're going to have to win on the road. See, that's one thing we didn't.
Well, they don't have to win a game on the road. The Celtics don't. Not in this series.
Why, you think they're going to win every home
game? They didn't win a game on the road and against Milwaukee and they won the series.
Right. Well, yeah, but eventually that's going to hold out. That luck isn't going to be there, so we'll see how it plays out. Brady, whoa, we got a big story coming up next. Big story that hit nationally, but it also hits home right here. So we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball.
Ouch!
Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Zach in Bristol said, Arnie, you being a Knicks fan, isn't your team eliminated on day one?
I thought the word eliminated seemed a little strange.
The Knicks were ahead of the Celtics on day one.
Yes, they were.
Were they 1-0?
They were 1-0.
Oh.
I think the Knicks are already eliminated for next year, too. It's already been eliminated.
What do you think of the David Fizdale hiring?
I like him.
Take that for data.
I only like him. Well, I mean, I knew him before that, too, but I only like him because I know the other players, all the players like him, and I know that LeBron likes him. Not that LeBron's going to go to the Knicks, so I'll just take the player's word that he's a really good, you know, player's coach. And he's done it. He did a good job in Memphis. I don't know what happened. Was it, you know,
was him and Marc Gasol didn't
get along. Right. But I didn't know what happened that made him so bad, though. Did they get rid of everybody? I don't know that. But I guess he's a pretty good coach. So I think it's a lot better than what we had. That's for damn sure. All right. Get to the Matt Patricia story, because this is hitting the nationally all over the place.
Yeah, Matt Patricia, former Patriots defensive coordinator, now the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Well, we're hearing a 20-plus-year-old story come back to light, and it's not a good one. So according to Texas court records, Matt Patricia was charged with aggravated sexual assault, but he was never prosecuted for it. This is all the way back in 1996. It involved him and a college teammate from RPI, and they were on spring break in Texas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was
Padre Island.
South Padre Island.
Yeah, I've been there.
Is that Texas?
Yeah, South Padre Island, yes.
Okay.
Big, you know, destination for spring break. No doubt about that. Yeah. You know, something about that. First of all, it's important, even whether the time frame was, you know, 1996 or whatever, he wasn't charged, right? He was arrested.
He was charged, but not prosecuted.
He wasn't prosecuted. I think part of me feels it's a little shady that this was kept from Detroit. Not that I would say, hey, you got to bring it up, but if it's full disclosure, shame on Detroit for not knowing about this.
Well, also, yeah, just to play devil's advocate to that, you do an extensive background check.
Right.
How is this not found? This is
right.
a public
shame
record.
On, right, shame on Detroit for not
finding
that.
I thought you were saying shame on Patricia for not telling them.
Well, no, shame on Detroit. Well, he should be open and honest if you want the job also. If I found out that he didn't say anything to me and then I did the full background check and I found out, you're not getting the job. It's as simple as that. If you're not going to be forthright and honest with me, then I'm not going to give you. If I say, is there anything I should know about you, and you say, no, absolutely nothing, and then I find this out, well, guess what? You're not getting the job.
No, I don't think that's not unreasonable.
No, but that's not reasonable
really
at all.
It just, but.
But it was 20 years ago, and there's no
right.
It was 20 years ago.
There's
plus,
no charge,
and there's no the charge was the case was dismissed.
But 20 years ago, it's still a very, very serious offense.
Yes.
So you could bring it up and say, "Look, I had a problem 20 years ago that was taken care of.
I agree with you.
And it was never been a problem since then. So I just want to get that out in the forefront.
Is there a possibility that maybe he did in his conversation with
maybe
Detroit?
He did. What? No, he didn't. He didn't bring it up.
They said they didn't know about it.
Yeah, they didn't know about it. Okay. Had no idea. Okay. None whatsoever. So.
All right. Yeah, that's a tricky situation when you're talking about something that happened 20 years ago. But as you said, something very, very serious. I agree with you, though, Arnie. I would, if I were Matt Patricia, I would put it exactly like that. I wouldn't give them great details. I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. I would just say, look, here's what happened. And it's done. And we've all moved on. And I hope you'll hire me.
You know,
me.
Brady, I'm just going to say this. We have to do it. Did we all not fill out job applications? On the job application, does it not say, have you ever been convicted of a crime or something like that?
Yes, but he hasn't been convicted.
I'm not saying convicted, but they're asking us about past things like that could have been 20, 30, 40 years ago. I'm sure Matt Patricia didn't have to fill out a form, but you know, maybe he should release that type
of
information.
There's two extreme sides to this. One, everything that this woman alleges happened, and it just didn't go to trial, and Matt Patricia has been skating by, you know, having done something wrong. That's one extreme.
It didn't go to trial, but she didn't show.
Right. I understand that. Yeah. So the case was dismissed. So he either did it and has gotten away with it for 20 years, which is disgusting. He didn't do it, and she's bringing it to light now to capitalize on his recent millionaire status as now the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Those are both extremes, but they're both possible.
One second. I'm confused. I don't think she brought it to light recently, did she? I think this was something that was found. She's not come forward.
She hasn't come forward.
I think the media dug this.
I don't think she came forward, nor do I think she's going to come forward. I could be wrong, and maybe I misread it, so let's kind of get right on this one. I don't think we know her name. I don't think she's come forward with the article. I think it was found out by a media person. And look, I don't know if she ever will come forward because it was just released again, but I don't think she will. So that's what I heard to understand about the story there.
I mean, it just says, and he talked about it today. He says he passionately expressed his innocence during a 7-minute news conference Thursday. Day after a 22-year-old aggravated sexual assault indictment in Texas was reported by the media. So that's what the media dug.
Right.
Somebody did their job and did a damn good job of it and found it.
Right.
And here it is. And that's, you know, that's what he says. He was falsely accused during spring break in 96, he was very passionate about it, too, just watching him. The truth is on my side. I lived with the mental torture of the situation, whose facts can be completely ignored or misrepresented with disregard of the consequence and pain that it would create the other person. So, obviously, he's completely denying it.
Brady, why don't you read some of the stuff that the police chief wrote back in 1996, because he was very specific about some of the stuff that went on.
Well, he said that, Patricia and his teammate burst into a room at a Radisson Hotel, and then that's where the assault allegedly occurred. Said that that Patricia knew this person. They had become friends while on spring break, and that's really it. I mean, that's what the police department said. MassLive.com comes out and says also the NFL is investigating the situation, and I guess the question I want to ask you then, Arnie, is if you're going to blame Patricia and the Lions, do you have any culpability among Robert Kraft and the Patriots that he was on this staff for 14 years?
Of course, absolutely. Why would I just put it on the Lions and not on the Patriots? Absolutely. Now, maybe the Patriots knew and just never released that. That's not their job.
And one thing that happened out of the press conference today was that he said the allegations never come up in interviews before. He said, quote, never been part of any process that I've been involved in. And he said when he had been asked about it that he has been honest about what happened.
Well, who asked him about it?
Exactly. How does that not come to light? If he's been asked about something this serious, then
somebody else wanted to know.
Why is this the first time we're hearing about it 22 years later?
Well, that doesn't mean they have to release it publicly, but they could have wanted to talk to him. You know, like sometimes you interview players after the years that we want to talk to Matt Patricia. Maybe it was a former team that wanted to – maybe that's why he would never got the head coaching job that he wanted a long time right now.
And according – I mean, it goes on to talk about the fact that the Lions never brought this up. It was never part of the line
didn't
of questioning.
Because they didn't know.
Yeah.
They had no idea who they were hiring.
The dismissal reads, victim is unable to testify and cannot give a date certain when she will be available. Victim may request the case be refiled at a later date.
Now,
that's
remember,
what it read back in 97 at this point.
This is not a girl that saw money signs. This is not a girl that saw money signs and a famous person. You're talking about a bunch of people on spring break and with no name cachet. I just want to go ahead and say it
right
like
at that point. And you are right. Right now, it does not look like she is the one bringing this to light. And that's something that I misunderstood. No, I thought maybe she had come out with this.
Well, there's a lot of different parts of this. And it's going to be tough to try to go through all the facts of this case. And I don't think we're ever going to find out.
Right, though. But you mentioned earlier talking about the fact that it's interesting that this is coming up now that he's a head coach. But wasn't he kind of famous winning Super Bowls as the defensive coordinator of New England?
Yes, but people still didn't know. In this day and age, shame on all the NFL inside reporters that are supposed to find stuff like this out that had no clue. That's their job to go and find this stuff out. We'll come back, mistake of the day. We'll get you that, and we'll have Last Story Standing. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, guys, let's start with the mistake of the day. Brady, it was, Casey O'Connor? Which one did he get wrong?
When I said the Celtics were playing game one Monday, when it is, in fact, Sunday.
That's right. That's
job,
right.
Casey.
That mistake of the day is brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time.
All right, get to Last Story Standing. What did you find, Brady?
Yeah, did you enjoy this one, Arnie? How about the fact that the New England Zoo, they lost a bet with the Philadelphia Zoo around the Super Bowl, and they named a baby goat Nick Foles.
Oh, so, I love it. I love it.
So the... Because Tom Brady is seen as the GOAT.
Right.
The next GOAT baby that was born at one of the zoos was either going to be Tom Brady or Nick Foles. So baby Foles now resides as a baby GOAT at New England Zoo.
One of those times Tom Brady isn't the GOAT.
By the way, I got a score for the Bruins to sign next year. Woo! Goal scorer. He's played every game he plays, he scores like five or more goals.
What is he?
Vladimir
seven?
Putin.
That's right. Had five goals as they won again 12-7.
Vladimir Putin. Yes, I heard about
that. Yeah, I think they let some of the goals go in. Yeah, I think they do, Rich. I think they kind of do that, Rich.
Nick
I'm serious.
Foles.
I hear it was rigged.
Yeah, they all are. I mean, he never loses. He's won every year. How about that? Isn't that great? Always has to stop.
I hear the
team.
Russian Hockey League is pretty corrupt, actually.
Yeah, is it really?
The team that Putin owns wins the championship every year.
Oh, right? Get out of here, is it?
That team at one point, I think, had Ilya Kovalchuk and Pavel Datsyuk on the same team.
How funny.
No wonder. Even at 35 or whatever they are.
Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley game night?
I'm going to talk about why, despite the Red Sox lost yesterday, I'm happy for Brett Gardner, and I'll tell you why.
All right. For Brady, for Rich, I'm already intern
Alec. Don't say an X. Alec.
I said Alec.
I know. I'm just making sure you know.
Alec.
Despite the fact that he brought in fish during the show today.
Champlain Valley game night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.